Welcome to another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Libby Fisher-Hellman, the author of an award-winning amateur sleuth series featuring Chicago video producer Ellie Foreman. So far, the series contains four books, including An Eye for Murder, A Picture of Guilt, An Image of Death, and A Shot to Die For. Libby also published over 12 short stories and edited the crime fiction anthology Chicago Blues, which will be released this month by Bleak House Books. Welcome, Libby.
Thank you, Rochelle. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to talk to you. I am such a big fan of your Ellie Foreman series. I wonder if you might kind of set up the series for our listeners if they're interested in going and getting a good mystery.
Sure. Ellie is not a young woman. She's got a teenage daughter. She's divorced. She lives in the suburbs. And she has a propensity for getting involved in situations that she probably has no business getting involved in. She is a video producer. That's her profession. And I chose that because I used to be a video producer, and it was something I knew something about, and so at least I wouldn't have to do too much research in that. But I wanted to put her in different situations where she would meet a diversity of people and find herself in dark places that some of us would prefer not to go.
That's great. Now, talk a little bit about this other career, writing video scripts and video producing, and how you move from that into writing mysteries.
I could say it was a really smooth transition, but it isn't. I still occasionally do write video scripts. When people ask me to, although I probably don't market myself, well, I know I don't. I don't market myself the way I used to. I was the kind of kid that was always reading. You know, I was the kind of kid whose mother said, go outside and get some fresh air, and I would say, no, I want to stay in and finish my book. Somewhere along the line, somewhere around 12 or 13, I discovered film and movies, and I took my love of reading and transferred it to the screen. So when it came time to go to decide what I wanted to do in life, I decided I wanted to make movies. And I actually went to graduate school in NYU and have a master's degree in film production.
Wow.
The only problem is that it's really hard to get a job.
Yeah.
In the film industry that lasts more than a couple of months or even a year or so. So I gravitated toward TV news, which was fine. It was absolutely fine because I've always, you know, I was raised in Washington, D.C., and I always said, you know, when you live in Washington, D.C., and you're gossiping about the neighbors, you're talking politics. And so working in TV news with issues and, you know, politicians was just fine. At any rate, I started reading mysteries, I guess, about crime fiction about 20, 25 years ago. My mother was a prolific reader, and she got me started. I had been reading thrillers. You know, I read a lot of, you know, John le Carré and Ludlum and Ken Follett and Len Dayton. At the time, they were all men, which is not the case anymore, happily. And I was getting kind of bored because the stories all seemed similar. I mean, the world was going to blow up, the hero saved the world from blowing up, and then he walked off into the sunset with his girlfriend. And my mom gave me a mystery. She said, well, try this one, when I was complaining to her. And it happened to be a copy of a book called The Staked Goat by Jeremiah Healy, who's a wonderful mystery author in Boston. Well, I fell in love with the story, because it was not a big crime, not a big thriller, not a big espionage story, but it was real people doing real things, and yet there was this suspense and the cerebral puzzle of who did what to whom. And I got hooked on reading mysteries. So I kind of made a circuitous path from words to film and then back to words. But I do have to say that no one was more surprised than me when I actually sat down and started to write. If you had told me 10 or 12 years ago that I would have 4 books published and be working on my 6th one now, I would have said, what have you been smoking?
Wow.
Because it just wasn't in my master plan, you know, but I'm kind of glad.
Well, I'm curious about, you know, it seems like writing a script and writing a mystery are such different processes, and I'm wondering, what's the process like for writing a mystery? What kinds of research do you do, and kind of how does your day look? All of that stuff.
It's overwhelming is really what it is. I think what I have to remember most of all, though, is that I'm telling a story.
Hmm.
And in that sense, writing a video script and writing a book are not that different. If you're, you know, certainly writing a film script, you're telling a story. Writing a book, you're telling a story. And I don't have any pretensions to be the great American novelist. I won't be. I want to be a really good storyteller. So I'm hoping that, you know, that goal is what that's what I aspire to. The process, the problem and the challenges, it's not a problem. The challenge of writing crime fiction is that there are a whole lot of people that know what you're talking about.
Mm.
And they know when you're getting it wrong. So I do an enormous amount of research, particularly in not just, you know, using weapons but police procedure, legal procedure, forensics. I have to do it right because there are too many people that really do know the score. And the worst thing I can possibly think of is that someone takes my book and throws it across the room and says she doesn't know what she's talking about. So there's an enormous amount of research, and that really spills over into plot. To give you an example,
mm-hmm.
I'm just finishing my 6th book. It's a thriller, and I have had to rewrite the ending 4 times.
Wow.
Because the ending was incredible. It was an ending that I wanted as an author. I wanted it to happen this way, but it wouldn't happen that way. It wouldn't. My writing group said, no, it's just, you know, it's not credible. It just wouldn't happen this way. So I had to take it apart and figure out, you know, what was the real point of the climax and the ending, and how could I achieve that in a credible, believable way? And it took me 4 tries to get it.
Wow.
I think I finally got it. And, you know, and then, of course, when you see it, you said, well, of course, you know, simple. Why didn't I see it in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, maybe I was trying to do too much, but it is very important to me that I be authentic and that I be realistic. And that also, that's not just in terms of the crime and the investigation of the crime, but also in characterization. And this is where it kind of bleeds over into all sorts of kind of fiction. You know, your characters have to be authentic.
Hmm.
They can't be doing what you want them to do because it would be more fun. They have to do what they are capable of doing and what is real and what they can achieve. And that, in turn, drives the plot. But you have to be careful. You know, I have to be careful. Sometimes I still have my characters, or Ellie will do something, or she'll make a discovery, you know, and someone will say, well, how did she do that? And I'll say, well, I don't know. She just put it together. And they said, no. That's not good enough. You know, she really has to, you really have to track how she wouldn't just assume that A plus B plus C equals Z. You have to show how that's going to happen and how she can, you know, how she will actually come to that conclusion herself. So,
Libby, how did you learn all of this?
I'm still learning.
Astounded. I just, you know, you'd sit down at the computer and write it out, but...
Well, you know what? I'm always learning, and that's one of the great things about being a part of the crime fiction community in this. That I know of, pretty much all over the country, there are so many people that are willing to help you. It's a very generous community. I'm not sure quite why that is. I mean, not only for mentoring, but for getting help in how an autopsy would proceed, in going to a conference where they talk about plot. I think it's because we get all our demons out on the page, so everybody is so nice and helpful.
So if someone's listening and wants to write a mystery, how do they get involved with the crime fiction community?
Well, one of the organizations which I would definitely tell them to look up is Sisters in Crime. It is, and it's not just for women, even though it is primarily composed of women. It is an organization of over 3,000 people who are dedicated to the advancement of mystery authors and female mystery authors in particular. But what happens on the local level, and we have over 50 chapters in all the different states and large area metropolitan areas, are monthly meetings and sometimes conferences where you will get to listen to experts in their respective fields talk about whether it's procedure or whether it's writing or whether it's just a wonderful crime story that's happened in the area that the police are still working on. You get a lot of exposure that way. So Sisters in Crime, and you can get to the website. It's sistersincrime.org.
Great.
And so I would. That's one a great way. Another way is to go to a mystery bookstore in your area, or go on the internet, Google mystery stores, and find out who's coming to mystery stores that are near you, and go see the authors.
That's good advice.
You know, go to their signings. We always, every author, whether they're mystery or not, want people to come to signings. And wouldn't that be great to have someone who's really interested come?
Oh, that's great. Now, I know you write a blog, or with some other people write a blog called The Outfit, collective of Chicago crime writers.
Yes, we call ourselves The Outfit. It is a collection of, there's seven of us, seven crime fiction authors. We're all in Chicago. People like Sarah Paretsky and Barbara D'Amato, Marcus Sakey, Sean Chirkover, myself, Kevin Guilfoyle, and Michael Dimmock. And we started the blog almost a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's me, too. I can't believe it actually worked. We started it as a way just to extend, ourselves to people who might not know us or might want to know a little bit more about the way we think about things. And it's grown. It's become something that it's really worked out well. We are now perceived, at least in Chicago, as kind of a brand.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like we are asked to appear as a group at libraries and bookstores and things now. And that was a benefit that I really hadn't intended when we started. So we've been written up in some of the papers here, and everyone in The Outfit, by the way, has a story in Chicago Blues, which you mentioned at the top of the show.
Yeah.
So it's become more than I had thought. It's also really, it's good. It's a really good exercise for me individually. It keeps my nonfiction writing skills sharp. It's tough. It's like writing a column. Thankfully, it's only once every 2 weeks. But even that, it comes around much faster than you think, much more quickly than you think. And I'm working on one now for Wednesday. And you want to search for something that's a little bit different. We don't blog about doing our laundry and staring out the window. I think we've all kind of... we all want to blog about things that are kind of interesting, kind of maybe intellectual pursuits or aspects of crime fiction or aspects of crime. For example, I'm going to be blogging about violence on Wednesday, and you'd think maybe that everything in the world has already been said about violence, but, my attitude has changed, and I'm kind of surprised at myself for that. So anyway, that'll be soon.
Well, I was really intrigued by the blog. I thought it was interesting. It commented on real news stories, a lot of great links. I'm wondering how you got from being just a blog that's out there to being kind of a brand that people referred to. Did you do something? Did some magical pieces come together? What happened with
it?
It
was really serendipitous. It was more serendipitous than any logical plan. When we started this blog, I had no idea if it would last more than 3 or 4 months, frankly. And I'm thrilled that it has. But people started to hear about us and just started to read us. And
wow.
I think, it was a hook that didn't exist in Chicago prior to, and I think it just probably came at the right time.
Well, it's amazing. It's so good when something happens like that.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing to me too.
Well, talk a little bit about this new book, The Chicago Blues, and what it was like to be both writer and editor, and kind of how you found people, the whole deal.
It was wonderful from the very beginning. I loved editing, and it showed me that, boy, if I don't make it as a crime fiction writer, maybe I can, you know, make it as an editor one day. There's hope in the future. Bleak House Books is a small but very well-respected publisher in Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm.
And the publisher and I were talking at a conference, at a mystery conference, and we were talking about a book that had just been published called Chicago Noir. There's a whole series of books by, I think it's Akashic, that have different cities, Dublin Noir, New York, Manhattan Noir, Wall Street Noir, you know, L.A. Noir, San Francisco Noir. They have, and they're all fairly dark stories, anyway, collections of stories. Chicago Noir had come out, and unfortunately, there weren't very many crime fiction authors from Chicago represented in the anthology. There were stories by people who... basically people in the crime fiction community had never heard of before. So I was, which isn't a bad thing, it was a good thing, but it was just sort of people noticed that the familiar names weren't there in that book. So I was talking to the publisher and I was saying, you know, I think we should do something with all the right people. Not the right people, that's wrong. That was terrible of me. With different people. And they agreed. And so to make it fair, I made a list of everybody that I knew in Chicago who wrote crime fiction, and I sent them an email inviting them to submit a story to what was going to be called Chicago Blues.
Wow.
And when the stories came in, I have to tell you, it was like having a Christmas present every time a story came in, because I just loved reading them. I just loved it. It was, you know, it was a story. It was a great story. And interestingly, I could usually tell after the first or second paragraph whether this was going to be a story that was going to make it into the anthology or not. There was just something about the quality of writing that you knew, you know, and that actually made me feel pretty good, because it showed me that I had, you know, acquired somewhat of a, I could judge writing.
Yeah.
Whether it was really there, really solid or really beautiful. And that to me is really the first line of defense in any kind of writing, is the prose, you know, smooth and silky and velvety, and does it, you know, concise and does it read well? So I think I got about maybe 40, 45 stories. And of those 40 or 45 stories, 20 made it into the anthology. So roughly half.
Wow.
And it was just a labor of love from the beginning on till now. And we have been very fortunate to get some great reviews. We're hoping that people will want to take a look at it. It'll be out quite soon.
Oh, it sounds great.
Yeah. Well, we have, as I mentioned, everyone in the outfit has a story in it. And then there are some writers like Stuart Kaminsky, who doesn't live in Chicago but certainly has written about Chicago. Chris Nelscott, who actually lives out on the West Coast, I believe in Washington or Oregon, but has a series here in Chicago. Max Allen Collins, who lives in Iowa, plus a number of other writers here in Chicago. So
you don't have to live in Chicago to write it.
No, you didn't have to live in Chicago.
You could still have those Chicago Blues, even if you lived
somewhere else.
You betcha.
As long as they were writing about Chicago.
Yeah.
That's all I cared about.
So if someone is listening and thinking, hey, I'm going to write a mystery novel or a crime fiction novel, what advice would you give to a first-time mystery writer?
Just read as much as you possibly can. Get a feel for what's being published. There are a lot of subgenres within crime fiction. You know, there are There are what we call cozies, which were named for the cozy over a teapot, which are much, you know, there's no graphic violence, there's no violence at all. It's there. The puzzle is what's really important, and they often feature, you know, characters, quirky kind of characters doing quirky kind of things. Then there's hard-boiled crime fiction, private investigator fiction, where, you know, you're walking the mean streets of the city and seeing all sorts of dark things. There's suspense, there are thrillers, there's legal thrillers, medical thrillers, there's all sorts of it. So the advice I would give someone is to read and to read very widely. Get a sense of what you like and what you don't like. And, you know, that's what I do. Whenever I'm stuck, whenever I have writer's block or I don't know where to go next with my book, I'll just sort of take a break for an hour and pick up one of my favorite books. And 9 times out of 10, I will see something in the prose that, you know, or in the story that said, well, you know, what if I did this in my story or something similar? And it's wonderful. So.
Wow. Well, you mentioned favorite books, favorite authors. Maybe you could leave us with a few.
Oh, boy. That's so hard.
I know. It's a hard question.
I love William Kent Kruger's books. He's from Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, the northern Minnesota.
Yeah, he writes a fabulous series. I like Sarah Paretsky. I think she's great. As for a classic author, Ross Thomas is one that we often overlook, but he's just wonderful. Let's see. Karen Slaughter is a great female writer. Zoe Sharp is a British author, and she writes a very tough, dark, wonderful series with a female protagonist. Peter Robinson is another British author. He writes a wonderful series, police procedural series. Shall I keep going?
Yeah, well, this is great. I'm writing down as fast as I can.
Lee Child is always good. He's a great author. Megan Abbott is someone that your listeners might not know about. She writes about the 40s and the 50s, and her prose is just gorgeous. Wonderful. I mean, you just want to put it on the mantle and look at it.
Well, Libby, thank you. This has been amazing.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I'm gonna have to hang up and go to my library.
Oh, thank you.
And then to my computer. I'm just, you know, I love your mysteries, and now you give me a whole bunch of other people to fall in love with too. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And I appreciate your time in joining us today.
No problem.
This has been another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. You can find a link to Libby Fisher-Hellman's website and her most recent book at my website, rightnowcoach.com. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to always write.